Funny. Not there just because of that, though. Anyway, yes. Being a yes man. What is a yes man? Now, I think as I looked into this, I realised that there's probably some slightly different definitions around about what this is. Because there is the kind of Donald Trump surrounds himself with yes men. You know, the kind of someone saying they're just going to surround themselves with people who agree with what it is that they say. But there's kind of a new, slightly colloquial use of yes man that has developed. And I'm disappointed he's not here this evening. But there's yes man Dan. If you Google Daniel Nankerville, that photo comes up, top of Google image search. So there you go. I didn't need his permission because it's in public domain. Anyway, yes man Dan. And there's the kind of colloquial use of yes man, which is someone who, if you say, do you want to go out tonight, they will say yes. They were the kind of person who say, hey Dan, you know how you don't really like chilies? Why don't you eat this chili? And he'll say, yes. Hey Dan, you know how you still don't like eating chilies? If I dip this chili in Nutella, let's see if you like it then. And he says, yes, this is a true story. And then he goes, that wasn't such a great idea, was it? His father rolls his head in despair. There's being a yes man. And just to, I also include in that yes people, yes women, yes people. Being people who say yes. I am not that kind of person. I'm the kind of person I much prefer to kind of weigh up my options beforehand, to consider what there might be, to make informed choices. I kind of feel if I leave it to the last minute, I might miss out on the best deal or the best option, which ironically also means I can then miss out, because by failing to be spontaneous you can also miss out on good opportunities. So there's an irony to that, but I'm not quite that kind of yes and immediate person that perhaps others like yes man Dan is. But what's it like when it comes to our walk with God? Are we people who are ready to say yes? A couple of years ago, this guy, Bear Grylls, was the kind of poster boy for the Alpha Course. For those who don't know who Bear Grylls is, he's kind of a wandering adventurer. He's pretty sure his background's in the Army, the SAS, or something like that, but has now become famous of doing these kind of survival programs. He's the kind of person who would survive for 7 years on insects with a shoelace. That kind of thing, and became very famous for doing that. But he's also a Christian, an evangelical Christian, and he talked in encouraging Alpha and encouraging people to do Alpha, saying that his greatest adventure wasn't all these things he'd done in the jungle, wasn't, I think he met Barack Obama and things like that. He's done all sorts of crazy stuff. He said his greatest adventure was the adventure of faith, was the adventure of following Jesus. And I thought, well, what do we mean by that? Well, Google defines adventure as an unusual and exciting or daring experience. That something of his journey of faith had been unusual, exciting and daring. In fact, his greatest adventure that he's had. Is that what it's like for us in our journey of faith? Do actually we find that we've in something that is unusual, exciting or daring? We're looking at the beginning of Abraham's story with God this evening. And if you want to look, jump to the other end of it, Abraham's described in Romans chapter 4. Abraham is the father of all who believe. He begins this story here in Genesis chapter 12 and ends up later on in the New Testament being described as the father of all who believe. And we're going to take some time exploring this kind of adventure of faith that Abraham's on. And tonight we're going to look at how that begins and ask the question, well, if we want something of that adventure of faith, if following Jesus really is this unusual, exciting, daring experience, how does Abraham begin that? And can we discover something for us of how we can enter and walk in that way as well? For those who are less familiar with the story through Genesis, just to help you out, Abraham, his name is changed a little bit later on to Abraham it's the same guy, just helpfully the names being different if you're less familiar with the story through. Abraham, the same guy. So, what goes on with him? And I think the answer to how this begins is all in verse 1, really. We don't have to go too far in chapter 12 to discover what's going on. The Lord had said to Abraham. It begins by God calling Abraham. This doesn't actually start with Abraham coming up with a cunning plan, with him saying, I'm going to go off and I'm going to have this great adventure. I'm going to go off and I'm going to do this. I'm going to go off and I'm going to make my name great. This doesn't start with Abraham's plan. This starts with God's call. In fact, if you look the chapter before, in chapter 11, we see exactly the opposite of that, the Tower of Babel, and people get together and saying, let's do something really great. Let's make ourselves famous and build a whopping great big tower. Chapter 12 starts very differently. God calls Abraham. It begins with God's call upon him. And this certainly doesn't come from Abraham's merits. This certainly isn't God picking Abraham because in somehow he's got what God needs. He's saying that Abraham's going to become this great nation, yet Abraham is probably about 75 years old and has no children. This would seem to be a problem immediately from the idea that he's going to go on and be the father Abraham who has many sons. It doesn't seem that he's stopped doing the actions, Elsie, I can see you. This seems to be a bit of an issue. And he certainly, from what we know of, isn't a famous and significant person who's going to go on and do this. He certainly, as we go through the story of Abraham, we'll find he's certainly not someone who gets it right all the time. Although he looked to lots of his credits tonight, as we go through, we'll discover he isn't perfect, far from it, and has times of doubt, of difficulty, of failings. We're going to go through that journey too. So it certainly wasn't that he was by any means perfect, and yet God calls him. And something's true of that for all of us, that God calls each one of us, not upon our own merits, from Ephesians 2, for it's by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. We're reminded that God's call on each one of us, the call to follow him, isn't upon our own merits. But God calls each one of us, and we're called to respond through faith. God's call to each one of us is from him. Or as Jesus put it, you did not choose me, but I chose you. Jesus calls each one of us to follow him, not because of what we've done, but because of his love. And that verse goes on, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. That the calling is a call for a purpose. This isn't just the call to follow Jesus, but this is a call that we might go and do the things that he has called us to do. Here it talks about bearing fruit. We're told elsewhere that God has prepared good works in advance every day for us to do. That God has that bigger picture of calling, that calling for us to follow Jesus in the first place. That bigger picture calling for our lives, but also in the little everyday that God has prepared good works for us to do. We're called to follow Jesus and to go and to bear fruit. This adventure that yes man Abraham begins by listening to God's call. By being open to what it is that God is saying to him. The Lord had said to Abraham. And then he goes on in verse 1. The Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household. There's this call to go. Actually, the next part for Abraham is actually not what it's going to be going to do, but what he is leaving. He's to leave his country, his people, his household. And those actually are hugely significant things. Hugely significant for us today if we were to do that, and massively for Abraham in his time. To leave his country. We might talk about citizenship, you know, to say, you know, the place where you belong, your national identity, to leave that behind and to go somewhere else. Of course, we're a bit more familiar with that now, aren't we? The idea that people would up sticks and go and move somewhere else for a time, maybe. Not many permanently, but we know that happens. People uproot and go somewhere else. But for Abraham, in a very different time, to leave behind his country, his identity in that way, and probably many of us recognise the difficulty of even us to do that, to leave behind your national identity and to go somewhere else, where you're never quite at home. It was a big call to go. To leave behind his people. There's a sense of security in that, that he's surrounded by those who are his people, his kin, his broader family. There's a sense of protection. We've suddenly become much more aware of the difficulties of what it is to be isolated, haven't we? For those who are either having to be isolated or those who are isolated at a time like this. It's as though Abraham voluntarily steps into that kind of isolation to give up the security of being surrounded by his own people. And he leaves his household. He leaves his country, his identity, his people, his security, and his household. And actually this comes down, in some sense, to a financial implication. He leaves behind his father's household, his father's land, the inheritance that might have been his. He leaves it behind. He goes from the land that they dwelt in to a foreign land, to somewhere that was not home, to quite literally camp, to pitch tent somewhere else. Actually, he puts at risk his survival, his identity, his future, his security. He puts all of that at risk. He puts all of that at the hands of the Lord. Something of entering into this adventure with God means that we must not hold on too tightly to the things of this world. Actually, to step into that call requires us to be willing to let go of some things. It's similar to the call of Jesus to the disciples to follow him. Come, follow me, Jesus says in Mark 1, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. But they gave up their career, their livelihood, their family business to go off and follow Jesus, to go literally and follow this wandering preacher. This was the call, to go and leave behind the way of life that they had known and enter into a new life. And the call for us, if we're going to enter into life following Jesus, is similar. Not necessary to leave behind a career, although for some, that is what happens. A guy from my former church, who came back to God, actually had a very significant call back to God, and had been managing pubs and all sorts, and had a call into the ministry, and within a couple of years found himself in the perilous career of being a Baptist minister. It was a complete change for him, of his life turned around. But the call to follow Jesus might not be a career call, but is that leaving an old way of life, leaving an old way of life where whatever it was that we lived for, whether it was for our own decisions or the desires and wills of others, to leave that life and to enter into a life of following Jesus and placing him above all else. We don't have it here, but in some churches their baptistry is modelled around this, that they have two sets of steps to their baptistry, so that you go in one and you leave by another, to say you don't go in and then turn back. You're leaving an old life behind and entering to a new life following Jesus. They wanted that extra bit of symbolism just to make it really clear. But that's also an ongoing thing. It's not just that one point, but at times God will call us that there may be things that we need to let go of as we follow him in those things that he's calling us to do. There may be times where actually there are things that we need to leave behind. Maybe as drastic as Abraham, to leave our country and go somewhere else. Think of Annie Brown, who has been a member of this church for many, many years, who recognised the call of God and has gone to Nepal and now has settled there, it seems like, for the very long term. Who's left all sorts behind to go and do what she believed God was calling her to do. Sometimes there's those points as we follow Jesus of leaving behind and being ready to let go. Abraham, as he said yes to God, was ready to listen to God's call and ready to let go. For him, it meant that. It meant his country, his people, his household, he was leaving behind. The Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you." God offered Abraham a promise. And it's expanded in those second and third verses. And you can see it's a promise that's full of blessing. "Go and I will bless you. I will bless you. I'll make you a blessing to others." This is a promise full of the blessing of God in Abraham's life. This isn't about what Abraham will do, but this is about what God promises to do for Abraham. And this is kind of wonderful turnaround, really, from the chapter before. If you get back through all the stuff of all the names and everything, the beginning of chapter 11, when we get the Tower of Babel, like I mentioned earlier, when man got together and said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we might make a name for ourselves." The chapter before, we get this kind of hopeless story about humanity trying to make something for themselves and ending up scattered. And then we begin chapter 12 with the blessing of God saying to Abraham, "I will make your name great." Saying, "This is what I promise to do for you. Not that you need to do for yourself, but that which I will do for you." And these promises, this blessing, isn't kind of the airy-fairy, you know, God bless you with no real kind of meaning or heart behind it. These are real promises that are worked out in Abraham's life, in the history of his people, of how even though it's a bit of a wobbly journey, how we see actually God fulfilling the promises and the blessing that he makes here throughout salvation history as we work our way through the rest of Scripture. This is the promise of God's blessing. And the promise of God's blessing isn't just something that's for Abraham, but for us all. From 2 Corinthians chapter 9, "And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work." The blessing of God isn't just about Abraham, but for each one of us. God's able to bless you abundantly. To bless us in Jesus Christ, John chapter 1, "And from his," says Jesus, "fullness, we have all received grace upon grace." Abraham said yes to God, was able to step out and say yes to God's call to leave behind because he was trusting in God's promises, because he was trusting in the God who was offering this blessing in his life. And actually, as he does that, as he steps out and begins this journey, as we read a little bit further in this chapter, we see that God assures him of it. We get through to verse 6. "Abraham went, he travelled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land." He's entered into this foreign land with a foreign people. And the Lord appears to him again and says, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. As he steps out on that journey of following after what God's asked him to do, God appears to him again, reassures him of just the same promise, of saying, "This is still what I'm going to do for you. My promise is still there." And Abraham responds by continuing to worship God, to establish the worship of God in this, to him, a foreign land. Actually, as we do that, as we step out, as we seek to follow after God's promises in the way that he's called us, so often we find that he offers us that reassurance, that encouragement that we're heading in the right direction, that his promises are true. So are you ready to listen to God's call? Are you ready to say yes, to listen to what God is saying to you and do it? Whether it's in that big picture of the whole journey of your life, the kind of turning point, like we see Abraham here, to leave and to go, or whatever it might be. Are you ready to listen? Or is it in even the small things of the good works he's prepared in advance for you to do? Are you ready to listen to God's call? And maybe the response is, you know, well, I struggle to hear what it is that God wants me to do. I don't know. Well, I'd encourage you to listen to his voice, to read the Bible, God's word, ready there for you to look at, that he might speak to you through it, to pray, and to seek the Holy Spirit to guide you throughout your days. I was saying to someone a little while ago, saying, about an issue, and saying, I don't really know what it is. What should we do? What's the next step? I don't really know. I don't really understand. You know, can you help me? And I was hoping for some practical advice. And I got, well, have you prayed about it enough? Which wasn't what I was looking for, but was probably a fair answer. That actually, there's that challenge for us, of where sometimes we're lacking that direction, hearing God's voice, that actually maybe we actually just need to seek him. Are we listening to God's call? Are we ready to go? Is there something that you need to let go of? Do you know what it is that God is calling you to do? Do you know that God is calling you to follow him in the first place? To actually give your life to follow Jesus? But you know that you're struggling with that because there's something that you just struggle to let go of. Are you ready to let go of the things of this world to follow after God's call, to follow Jesus with your life? Are you ready to trust God's promises? Because the only way that we begin this kind of adventure is if you're willing to trust God's promises. Because sometimes the difficult things he calls you to are only possible if you're willing to trust what he says, to trust the promises of his word, to trust that he is the one who will be with you, who will lead you and guide you. But what if we don't say yes? What if we just say no? What if Abraham had said no? You know what? I'd rather stay with my country, my people, and my father's household. Thank you very much. Seems a bit easier to me. Just think of what Abraham would have missed out upon. The adventure that begins with him taking this seemingly crazy journey to leave. Think of what we would miss out upon. It would definitely mess up the song, because it wouldn't be Father Abraham. It would have to be Father somebody else who God called instead. I'm sure it wouldn't be as catchy. You have to look through the list of names at the end of chapter 11 and see if you think there's someone else who might have been more suitable. But of course, Abraham did say yes. He responded to God's call. And we see him begin this adventure. If we would say yes, and like Bear Grylls, capture something of actually the greatest adventure we can have in life. Turns out we don't need to travel overseas for, which is good, because you can't right now anyway. The greatest adventure actually in life, as someone has discovered, who's had far greater adventures than I've ever had, and probably anyone in this room's ever had. We can step into this adventure that's unusual, exciting, and at times incredibly daring. In the big picture sometimes, and in the little daily acts, as we step out and follow God's call. So be like Abraham. Be a yes man when it comes to what God calls you to do. Say yes to him. Thank you, John.